welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here to talk about not Friday the 13th somehow. It's 1984, wherein we rip off things that Ty has actually seen this season. I'm Ty Tuesday, and I'm joined as always by Michelle Lovely and Slovy. Hey, team, what's good?
Yo.
Hello.
I'm so excited. I finally get to know shit. I see a hockey mask on screen, and I'm like, Pog, I know that one. Yay.
We did it.
Yeah, so this is part two of the first episode. Last time we left off at them once again being like, it's time to bring in a real guy who actually killed real people and make him like a fae, I guess. And yeah, this whole episode is just the most, like, we are trying to set up every slasher movie. There's not really a twist, is there? Now that I'm thinking about it, there's not really a twist,
Kind of.
At this point?
No, I mean, at the end of the episode, there is and I'm extremely doing air quotes, a twist at the end as to one of the identities of one of the main characters. But, like, it's, like, pretty obvious, like, from the beginning of the episode. So it's not really a twist, but they sell it as a twist, and they, like, play a sting where they're like, ooh, I bet you didn't expect that. I guess you didn't know that was the shortening of that name, huh?
I just remembered what they have Richard Ramirez, the real serial killer, do at the end of this episode.
The very good action he does. Yeah, sad that they make that Richard Ramirez who does it and not a fictional character, because it's really funny.
It ended with the main character, or our final girl, Brooke, having Richard Ramirez come into her house, and then she hits him with a big pan, and he runs away. And then she goes, you know what? That one guy was right. I should go to an isolated place in the woods to be safe from serial killers. Sure, man. she does. She just drops everything she's currently doing and decides to go with the... I was going to say Blowjob Brothers. It's really more of a Blowjob Squadron.
Yeah, the BJ Squad.
Mountains. Yeah. And just kind of says, like, oh, I don't know how I made it through that. To which Montana, who's just like the worst so far, is just like, I think you lived because you were a badass. She hit him with a pan, which is, like, good. But if she was asleep and he wasn't as stinky, maybe it wouldn't have played out the same, you know?
Yeah, if he wasn't so bossy. Like, he demanded, like, that she give him her jewelry and then he was going to kill her. Like, listen, I'm not, like, endorsing murder or whatever. But if I was a murderer and I was going to rob the person I was murdering, I don't think I'd worry about waking the person I was going to murder up to show me where the stuff was. I'll just figure it out once they're dead. You know what I mean? Like, that feels like the order of operations feels way out of whack.
Yeah, it's important to sequence your murder and robbery correctly, you know? And, like, it's not like she had, like, a big vault at the back where he's like, well, I need her to give me the codes. It was just, like, a box.
Yeah.
<you know?
laughs> And she lives in, like, a pretty small apartment. Like, there wasn't a lot in there. Like, a little bit of snooping around, and he would have found the big jewelry box on the dresser, which is the only, like, thing of value in the entire apartment. But Richard Ramirez wasn't remembered for being smart. He was remembered for being stinky. So, unfortunately, the show forgets to say that part out loud. So I'll say it anytime we have to talk about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
thank you. You're doing a service.
Yeah. Agree.
He definitely also says, in case anybody has forgotten between our last episode and this one, when he does get foiled Scooby-Doo style by a neighbor who heard precisely one noise and immediately started banging on Brooke's door to be like, I've called the police. When he gets Scooby-Doo thwarted, he's like, and I'm gonna follow you and Satan's gonna show me wherever you go. Which is not something that I think that the real Richard Ramirez ever threatened anybody with. I don't think he ever told
you don't
anybody
think,
that, like, Satan
you don't
was going to
help
him find people.
You don't think real-life serial killers have, like, magic special powers that they could use? Like,
no.
Like Ninja Turtles or something? Yeah.
So, sorry to take us aside already, but because they are forcing us to confront the reality in their fiction that the real serial killer, Richard Ramirez, who has already been in canon in their universe before, in their show. Do you think, given that they are so, like, adamant... Well, I guess... Sorry, I'm answering my own question in my head. I was going to say, how do you think that, like, the overlap of Richard Ramirez slash Satan, knowing what we know from season 8 and how he navigates the world, Satan, I mean, and then also Richard Ramirez's involvement with Hotel and the Hotel Cortez, which is the entrance to hell, and then James March. How do you think all that works out? And then I remembered that Richard Ramirez isn't dead yet in this season because it's 1984. So it's just the living man. But that does raise the question, does that mean James March is, like, stronger than Satan? Because if you already have, like, say you're, I don't know, I've never seen JoJo, but say, like, you're a JoJo and you can summon a stand or whatever, and your stand is Satan, isn't James March the serial killer ghost? Like, isn't that a downgrade, in your opinion? Don't you think that's, like, that's not a very lateral or, like, vertical move? That's a downgrade, IMO.
Well, you know what's weird to me is, like, if you're on the writing staff and it's like, hey, you know what character we should bring back from that one season? Richard Ramirez, the real life person. Like, you don't get to do that. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing if you're like, let's bring back James. You know what I mean? Like, you can bring back a fictional character you invented, I think, but it's kind of fucked up to be like, you know what? Why don't we have this real person as a recurring character?
What if that's what happened? What if there's a new set of writers? What if there's new writers this season who, like, weren't on the previous ones and they don't know who Richard Ramirez is? So they're just, like, looking at the catalog of, like, people who have appeared in previous seasons. And they're like, oh, how about we bring this character back, Richard Ramirez? And nobody bothered to tell them that was a serial killer because no one there cares. They're totally fine with putting a serial killer in the show. And they're like, yeah, that's a great idea, new writer. And the writer's like, sick, we're bringing back a legacy character. I did such a good job, without even knowing that it's just like a real guy who did real crimes.
Or it's like a prank they played on him, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, bring him back. No, we've never done that before. You know, like, and then
and
like
make him
somehow
hot, make him slutty.
Yeah. But somehow it's like a prank on the audience, too, because we have to actually watch it and deal with that consequence.
That's the thing that I don't get. Like, I know it's a dead horse, but, like, they did it in Hotel, too. I don't know what their weird fascination is with trying to make Richard Ramirez cool. They're like, Richard Ramirez was cool and sexy. That's what everybody remembers him for. I'm like, no, I mean, it's like, not.
Based on what I've heard about the rest of the output by the, like, leads of American Horror Story, they love fetishizing serial killers in, like, every way, shape, and form. Like, if you've committed a murder, Ryan Murphy is insistent you need to be fuckable.
Yeah.
Which, like, it does not usually line up with reality.
No.
It turns out.
Yeah. That was, like, a problem. That was a... unironically a problem with that, like, more recent crime drama he did about the Menendez brothers. He, like, fanficked them up and made them, like, super, like, sexy, and everyone was like, that's kind of weird given their story. Maybe we don't let Ryan Murphy do this anymore. Maybe we don't let him do any more of these.
Keep it to archive of our own, brother.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. So they're going to, the whole time, like, I need you guys to know that, like, though we are making him sound like a huge fucking dork ass because he is, the show wants you to think Richard Ramirez is cool. And, like, sexy. Everybody, if I were to, like, give an adjective to, like, what they want us to think about each of these characters, except for Brooke, it's cool and sexy. That's what they want us, the main cast, they want us to think that all of the main characters that are not the person who runs the camp we're about to go to, and Brooke, who's, like, the final girl character, those two are, like, the only two that are not... Cool and sexy is their only defining characteristic. And also, like, drugs. Cool, sexy, and drugs are, like, the three words to describe these gaggle of friends. And so our setup was, like, here's how they met, and here's why Brooke's involved now. And Brooke has decided to go to this summer camp, which I would like to remind everybody before we head to the summer camp, because that's where we're going right now, and we're about to have the quintessential friends in a van going to a scary location, like in every one of these horror movies, montage. I'd like to remind everybody that that 4 out of the 5 people in this group did not even know this camp existed 24 hours ago. And the people who work at the camp do not know 4 out of the 5 of them are coming, nor do they know if they're going to have a job once they get there. Their plan is to show up because one of them, I was going to call him Xerox, Xavier, was like, you should get a job at my camp. It starts tomorrow and it's out of town. It's for like 4 months. It's totally cool. You can just show up and do whatever you want. It'll be fine. They'll pay you and everything. And everybody just wholesale bought that. And if that's the case, and that is how things were in the 80s, which I wasn't alive then, so I don't know.
No.
If that's how things were in the 80s, I understand why boomers fully don't fucking understand the job market.
They weren't. You know,
okay,
listen,
just checking.
I wasn't that old to have a job in the 80s, you know, maybe we're not, but like, you know, in the 80s, like, you still needed to plan things like schedules and how many employees you had and shit like that. You know what I mean?
Payroll.
Like, yeah.
True.
Maybe a background check, like at least one background check. And they're obviously doing drug tests because one of the main cast, like, got kicked out of, like, some kind of sports team thing because he failed a drug test. So, like, drug tests are clearly something that, like, some people at least are doing. So that's something to, like, consider. Especially like a job that like specifically revolves around child care specifically, you'd think they'd maybe, even if they were fast and loose about other stuff, like child care related jobs, you'd think they'd do like, I don't know, like a little bit of screening maybe.
The only like exception is Action Park, but that's not what this is, right? Yeah. So like, you know.
well,
oh man, can you imagine American Horror Story Action Park? Now there's a season.
That's actually a really good idea now that you say it. Hold on. Wait, no.
This is the water slide that kills you, comma, haunted.
They wouldn't even have to like do very much. They could just like leave it. Like, yep, this is how it was, for real, but anyway.
Yeah, there was just exposed electrical cable on this water ride. It was fucking nuts. They just left it like that.
Tetanus for everybody. Everybody got tetanus. It didn't even matter, like, if you got, like, an open wound. You just got tetanus by walking into the park. It was sick. So it is time. It is time to navigate to the camp, unfortunately.
Yeah, so they get up there, and immediately Ray does cocaine and is just like, it's cool, man, I can do as much, I have cocaine and weed for everybody, which, no you don't. No you don't. In the 80s, you absolutely do not have enough coke and weed for everybody for 4 months? Show me. Show me how much you have. I don't believe you. That's like... Bro, you're working at a summer camp. You can't afford that shit. Drugs are expensive, man.
Specifically the cocaine. Like, they're really adamant that, like, everyone has to be on cocaine. And, like, that's not... In case you're wondering if that's, like, gonna be, like, important or relevant, it's not. They're just like, yeah, these kids do cocaine and weed and drink. They do all of them. They couldn't just, like... Because, like, most medias that are like, oh, these hooligans are getting up to no good, like, they'll do, like, underage drinking, or they'll smoke a little weed, like, one of the two, depending on what time it's set in. This is like, no, these kids do weed, they do cocaine, they drink alcohol and drive, they do all of them.
Do you know why cocaine's in here, though? I think is because this is, again, like, we're dark Stranger Things, and our Hey Remember the 80s is not light bright, it's cocaine, like people in Wall Street in the 80s did, and camp counselors wouldn't, but so what? It's the 80s, you know? That's my theory on it, why they're so cocaine heavy, but, you know.
Yeah, I would almost go as far as to say I would, like, listen, I would not extend this same mercy to any other television show. This is less me being like, this is a good show, and more me, like, this is pity more than anything. I would even, like, I would forgive it more if it did serve a purpose, because they are so committed to every single season having a character do a drug or some kind of intoxicant and then, like, doing something fucked up or making a bad decision. But the only thing that's about to happen in this next sequence could easily be done without any kind of influence whatsoever. And also the drugs barely affect what's about to happen. So it's not even like, they're using their really dog shit, like, story mechanism of person who's under the influence makes a terrible decision. They're just doing it for the love of the game. They're just having these characters go apeshit bonkers in the back of this van for no reason. Yeah, everybody does the cocaine. I forgot this dude's name was fucking Chet. So Chet, who's only his fourth word other than drug, sexy, cool is I guess it's two words: failed athlete or scorned athlete. Hates Olympics also works. That's a big part of him. Yeah. I would say the jock, but they kind of play Ray as the jock too. So it's kind of like the Blowjob Brothers, like the jock one and jock two.
There's like the jock who's not doing PEDs and the jock who is doing PEDs.
Anyway, Chet's like defining characteristic is that he pissed hot on a drug test. This is where we get the third time he has to bitch about the Olympics, and we're not done yet. We'll get plenty more of it before the episode is over. Chet's like, I'm not gonna do the drugs because it's how I got disqualified from the Olympics because they said I did 0.01% something in my system. I don't remember which one he says he had in his system, but he says that like it's not true. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, like, do you have follow-up to that? Or, like, did you have drugs in your system? Because, like, if you did, then you got disqualified for a reason, and you can't be this mad about it. If you didn't, sue them. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
Like, and you also, you have to pick one.
It's also, like, it kind of begs belief that it's just, like, you know who's really bad at drug testing? The Olympics. Like, no, I mean, I'm pretty sure they have their shit together here, you know, so.
Also, remember? I didn't write it down. I don't think they say, like, what sport. They're just, like, he was on the team for America. And I'm like, what sport?
And yeah, like when they turn on a TV and watch the Olympics later, he's like, I should have been there for stuff. Okay, man, what did you fucking do? Like, you shot, but what is it?
That's a great point. I didn't even think of that. Yeah, they don't ever mention it, but like it's an important thing, right?
If you're good enough at working out, they just let you go to the Olympics and figure out what you want to do once you get there. Unless you do drugs.
Also, ice skating. And I was in the wrong season, too. That's the real reason. But yeah, go ahead.
Damn.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, as far as, like, doping stuff goes, testosterone had, like, had a big uptick in, like, the late 70s to early 80s. That was, like, pretty prolific. And then there was an officialized ban of blood doping as like, a PED technique in 1986. So, like, this maybe would have been on the line of, like, they were testing for it, but it also would have been a time where it was, like, a known thing and a known risk. And, like, not to be rude to theoretical Chet or whatever, but if you do take PEDs and then you pop and aren't allowed to, go into an event, yeah, you knew the risks. Like, it's not like a surprise. You're not like, what the hell? I wasn't allowed to put horse testosterone in my dick. Like, yeah, man, you weren't allowed to do that. Like, this wasn't like iffy, you know? It wasn't like, oh, maybe. Like, no, man, you can't fucking do that.
I also think that maybe the writers of this television show don't really understand, like, the difference between, like, getting disqualified for, like, any kind of PED and drugs, because they just say that he had 0.01 in his system or something. And I'm like, first of all, that sounds like it could be a false positive, like for real, especially in the 80s when we like barely had drug testing stuff. Like, sue them or like fight it. It kind of sounds like they just said you have drugs in you and you were like, oh, shucks.
Yeah, I think full like anabolic steroid testing didn't like even exist until like mid 70s, like maybe late 60s. Cause like for a long time, they didn't give a fuck. Cause they were like, yeah, you're using the thing that makes you better at sports. Yeah. You're a little gladiator. Get out there, entertain us, go fight a lion. You know, like they didn't give a shit. It wasn't until it was like very clear that it had huge and detrimental long-term effects to the athletes that they're like, ah, we probably shouldn't have them kill themselves to do okay at the Olympics. That's probably bad.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about it now. I don't have a note about it later, which is why I'm bringing it up now. Like, as we're talking about this and the drugs, like, him, like, tweaking out right here, no pun intended, tweaking out about how I didn't do the drugs and I should have been allowed to go to the Olympics, and I'm not going to do your cocaine because I'm mad about it. They really, like, kind of waffle back and forth between whether it was, like, a PED or whether it was a drug, because later he's going to tweak out about the Olympics, and then he's going to do something that's going to make everybody mad, and another character is going to be like, it's okay, it's just roid rage.
It is one of those things where he freaks out and gets, like, too angry about something, basically. Not to spoil a thing that's coming up, but yeah, I think it reads even like roid rage. Like, you, the viewer, are supposed to be like, ah, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of
thing. But we never see him see him do steroids, but we do see him do cocaine 45 seconds from now. He definitely does the cocaine. So, like, I think that maybe during the writing, they forgot to, like, make us see him do steroids. Or, more likely, they don't know what doing steroids, like, is or looks like, especially in, like, the 80s. So they just didn't show it. And they're like, I don't even think roid rage would have been a term in 1984. Like, now that I think about it.
I don't know if anabolic steroids, because like steroids have gotten like exponentially more fucked up since like the mid 50s. Because like early on, it was just like a lot of like testosterone therapies and stuff. Like, for example, a lot of people think Arnold was like fully natural. No, man, he took like a shitload of testosterone. He was very open about it, too. Like, I don't think he sees it as not being natty, but like, sorry, Arnold, that shit's not natty, brother. That's like if you had to get a needle in your thigh to get your muscles bigger. You're not natty. Sorry, man. But, like, that's what it was. And, like, that can still be okay. Like, testosterone therapy is used for all sorts of, like, non-sport stuff, and it's fine. But, yeah, like, nowadays we have stuff like Trenbolone, which is just, like, 10 times stronger than a normal anabolic steroid, and it'll just explode your body in, like, unbelievably high speeds. So, probably not. I mean, okay. For anyone who doesn't know, Trenbolone is something that was developed to make cows, like beef cattle, produce more beef. I'm not kidding you. It has like no human testing whatsoever. It's just people found out if they shoot the thing that makes cows big into them, it also makes their muscles big. I mean, does it do disastrous things to literally every other part of their body? Yes. Yes. It's so much organ failure. So, yeah, I don't think roid rage would have been like quite as much of a concept or term. But, yeah, I get it. That's what they wanted this character to have.
Yeah. Right? They're like, he's the big angry meathead. That's the thing that you need to remember about him, is that he's big and here's the thing. They want you to think that he's big. He's the same size as all the other men in this show.
I think they kind of play that later as like a little bit of a twist, because I think they're also playing him a little bit as a possible pro tag in a way, or like love interest for Brooke, you know, the final girl kind of thing. Because like he's like, check this shit out, and he takes off his shirt, and I think they kind of show to her like having a little glance of like, say, you know, but.
Yeah, she has a moment because he's like, I was going to go to the Olympics and I blah, 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 blah. And then he's like, yeah, but you've never seen a body like this before. And he takes his shirt off and it's really fun. The shot, I wish I could like show the listeners a screenshot of it, because like his titties are like in the focus of the shot. And then in the background, out of focus, is Brooke looking at them with the look on her face of like a hungry dog looking at a cheeseburger. It's really, really funny. She's like, and I think like the implication is like, oh, it's because she's like sheltered and like she's really like reserved and like the like Brooke said, or not Brooke, Montana, like the last Montana. American virgin, like she's very like innocent and like hasn't seen a shirtless man before or whatever.
Right.
But he's like, when he takes his shirt off, like I'm just going to say there's been a lot of other men in the American Horror Story like universes who have been a lot more ripped than this guy, a lot more fit than this guy, including but not limited to Dandy from Freak Show, who was like a spoiled little lad with like a mansion who didn't do any physical labor. Even he was more ripped than this guy. He's fine. Like they play it up like, oh, isn't he so hot? Oh. Isn't he so good? He's fine. Like he's average.
Also, I don't know if the writers of this show have like actually seen Olympic athletes. Like there's a couple that are pretty hot. Don't get me fucking wrong, right? Like they're in good shape. But a lot of Olympic athletes are like outliers at their sport because they're shaped very not average. They're shaped in crazy fucking ways. Like, have you ever actually seen Michael Phelps? It's fucked up. It's like somebody took a stretch tool and just went crazy. Like, you know,
long boy.
Like, that's why he was able to just like rip it through the water, is because he was built in a bizarre way. And like, same thing with like shot putters, right? Like shot putters are like incredibly strong people, but they're like super compact, super tight, so they can spin real fast and throw a thing real fucking hard. But it's not like a model, right? That's like not the thing. Yeah.
Built like the goddamn Beast Titan from Attack on Titan. All arms and torso when you're a swimmer, somebody who needs to chuck stuff. Yeah. Yeah, he's fine. And like Ray, the other guy, he's also going to lift his shirt up in a second. And like, he's about the same, but Montana takes a picture of him. I think that I know that there's going to be a lot of these that we can confirm one-to-one. It does not take a genius to figure them out. This is my tinfoil hat. I think Montana taking the Polaroid picture here is supposed to be a, air quotes, nod, a.k.a. they stole it, to the beginning of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original movie. With the iconic like beginning opening sequence where the teens who are traveling across the state in a van together and doing drugs pick up a hitchhiker, and he has a camera and he takes a picture of them and tries to charge them money for it, etc. It's like a really well-known sequence and it's really famous. Yeah. And I think that's what they were going for here by being like, oh, Montana's gonna take a picture. That's what we do when we're teens in a car going across the state, is we take Polaroid pictures before we go into danger. And then Ray says, eat my shorts, because Chet says something about his body or whatever. And then he gives Chet cocaine. And then everybody does the cocaine. Literally everybody does the cocaine except for Brooke, which is really funny because later they're going to be like, Brooke, you only think that because of the drugs. And she's like, I'm literally the only person who didn't do the drugs. which I think is also pretty funny. And now it's time to start the sequence of events. I would argue the Polaroid started it, but now we're going to start the sequence of events that is just them straight up photocopying movies for the next 20 minutes. Yeah.
You know that one horror movie where they pull up to a gas station and there's a weird guy and then a kid comes out screaming pancakes and like bites somebody or whatever?
Cabin Fever,
they're just
yes.
Doing that.
Yes.
Yeah, Cabin Fever. They're just doing a Cabin Fever intro. That's the one that I think is the most relevant. I think that's what we should reference. They pull up to a shitty gas station in the middle of nowhere, and it is heinously unattended. They pop out and Xavier's just like, hey, do you have a payphone nearby? Fill up our van here. And yeah, Xavier just calls his own answering machine. One of the messages is so confusing.
You can't just take your dick and walk away. There's nowhere to run. I know exactly where you're going. I would like to think this is Richard Ramirez on the phone. There's no reason think that it is. It would be really funny if it was. We don't know who it is. And also, it doesn't ever get mentioned. So this is the only like time we hear anything about it. And I'll be honest, I don't remember it if it has payoff later.
Me neither.
So this sequence of pulling up to a gas station and meeting a weird guy who will tell you with no uncertain terms, oh, you're going to location, you're going to die there. It's so common that it has a term, and it's called the Harbinger. In horror, this is called the Harbinger trope. And it is so common that not only do we have a trope for it, it's in almost like a huge percentage of this style of movie. Friday the 13th, Hills Have Eyes, Texas Chainsaw, Cabin Fever. Take your pick. The gas station has a guy who just knows, TM, that the place that the kids are going is dangerous, is in all of these things.
And I will say, normally in those, the guy at the gas station is so weird and messed up and like blanketly kind of, you know, being shown as like, this guy's not all there. His marbles are a little out of order or whatever. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, there's a reason the teens would doubt him. But this is just like a pretty normal guy who's like, oh yeah, there's a, you're going to die if you go up there. You don't want to go there. You know that, right? And they're like, yeah, whatever, you old kook. And it's like, this guy's pretty normal.
Yeah. What's also
like,
really
why are you
weird?
Saying
it? It's like,
you
super
don't have to ask.
First of all, the way that they lead into it is because they do another trope that I hate, but it's really common, so I can't even like blame it on this specific show. Is as he's like pumping the gas for them, Montana, for really no reason, has to yell out to another person, "Hurry up! We're going to be late getting to this camp." Whatever the name of the camp is, Camp Crystal Lake or whatever. And then the character pumping the gas, the Harbinger in this case named Ed, is like, "You can't go to camp, whatever this is. You're going to die." And I would like to say, nobody asks any follow-up questions to that. Like Ty just said, this guy isn't crazy. Usually the reason why the main characters don't listen is because the character that says this is crazy. That's not true in Texas Chainsaw. They're just really dumb in Texas Chainsaw. But like in all the other ones, the reason why the kids don't listen to the Harbinger is because he's crazy. This is just a guy who said, "You're going to die if you go to that summer camp." And not a single person is like, "Why do you think that?" They're just like, yeah, whatever. And also, I would like to really emphasize, because something's going to happen later that really grinds my gears. He knows that it's dangerous to go to that camp. Ed, the Harbinger, knows that it's dangerous, which means he must know what happened, which we will get the full lore of here in a few minutes. But that means he knows the fine details of what happened, because otherwise, why would you say that? It wouldn't make any sense. It's just a summer camp. Something that will happen later pisses me off based on that information. But they leave because they're going to be late, ? And I'm like, you guys aren't even like employees. You're just going to show up and be like, can we have a job? You can't be late to something that you're not employed by. Like, you can't get in trouble with someone who isn't your boss. I guess, what would they have done, do you think, if the camp person would have just said no? Do you think they would have just, like, slept in the van for the whole summer and just, like, sulked? Or do you think they would have tried to get back home?
Brooke goes home and gets killed by Richard Ramirez, I guess, who's been waiting in her apartment the whole time. I don't know.
Yeah. But now we're back on the road, and we're going back to the camp, or we're going to the camp now. It's time to rip off more movies. They're lost. I don't know how they're lost, because it kind of seems like they're just on, like, one road. And they're like, weren't we supposed to turn back there? And Xavier's like, no, I feel that it's up here. And I'm like, hell yeah, brother. I love doing vibes-based navigation. That's how that's how they crossed the ocean in the olden days. They're all doing turbo drugs again. And then Xavier, like, kind of, like, looks over his shoulder to, like, talk to them about the drugs. And while he's doing that, they rip off a bunch of movies and they hit a guy with their van. It's a ripoff of a lot of things. This is a very common trope of driver takes eyes off the road, hits somebody with their car in a horror movie. But it is, in this case, explicitly a ripoff of Friday the 13th, the third movie. Like, frame for frame.
It's a little bit of I know what you did this summer, I think, too.
Oh, my God. I actually considered rewatching that franchise to see if there was anything they could have stolen, because that's the one that I have the least amount of knowledge about, to see how much they would have stolen from that. But I won't give them the credit of thinking that they've also seen it. If I haven't seen it, I don't think Ryan Murphy or Brad Fulchick has seen it either.
I know what you did last summer. I can go either way. I have seen it, and it's kind of a nothing movie in my opinion, but like it was like Jennifer Love Hewitt's breakout kind of thing in a way, you know? So I feel like there's a chance, because I feel like that's like a thing like Ryan Murphy would go for. You know what I mean? That's true. It's a kind of an anonymous movie. Like, it's just sort of like, yep, they hit somebody, he gets revenge on him a year later and kills them one by one, but that's all we really got. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing to it, so.
That's true. Yeah. As far as, like, is the scene is different, it is not different from Friday the 13th, the third movie.
Right.
In Friday the 13th, the third movie, they hit a guy with their car who will later be killed by Jason Voorhees. But when they hit him, they're like, he's probably fine. but they hit this guy with their car and they all get out of the car to check on him. This guy gets fucking launched like 50 feet in front of their vehicle. Like, I cannot overstate. He is so far ahead of the vehicle when they finally pull over to go check on him. He gets just ejected into the stratosphere. The order of events is going to be really confusing, because, like, spoiler for, like, 15 minutes in the TV show from now, I'm not going to go into all the details, but, like, this guy was already fucked up before he got hit by the car, is what I'm getting at. Which, given the order of events that's going to happen to him later, he's not dead, by the way, in case you're curious, what happened to him doesn't make any sense based on who would have done it. Anyway, he's already fucked up. We don't know that yet. It's, like, obvious because, like, Xavier says it, but, like, he's injured, but not because of getting hit by the car and being launched 200 feet forward. Xavier's like, see, he's got dried blood on him. That means that he's like, these are past injuries. We didn't even hit him with our car. And I'm like, dried blood? You're going to tell me the thing that happened to him was so long ago he's got dried blood on him? That doesn't make, whatever. Anyway, he passes out, like, just like, I would have assumed he was dead. But they're like, oh, be sleeping. And they put him in the van. And then they just still go to the summer camp like nothing happened. They don't go to, like, a hospital or anything. They're like, yeah, the summer camp won't mind 5 extra people. They're already not expecting 4 extra people, but surely a fifth one won't be a problem.
They probably have a full triage unit there, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, like, in those other movies, too, I feel like, because I haven't seen Friday the 13th, in a while, but, like, there usually is, like, some reason given that's like, hey, we can't bring this person in because, like, I guess here it's like we're all high, but I still feel like, well, you're gonna bring him to the camp and they're gonna know you were high then. You know what I mean? Like, you're not covering anything up, but all right, you know, I mean, is this
also,
good luck,
like,
with this plan?
This guy's not dead, so he's 100% in any other universe gonna wake up and be like, hey, these guys hit me with their car.
Yeah, yeah,
100%. Just FYI. These people hit me with their car, for sure. Yeah. Speaking of Friday the 13th and ripping off Friday the 13th, we're at the camp now. Hold on. I'm just going to scroll up because it's the title of the episode. Camp Redwood is the name of the camp. We're at Camp Redwood now.
Great.
Yay. Because it's
Camp
California. It's in California. Get it?
Red Lake, baby.
There are no redwoods anywhere, but it is California, so that's how you know.
Red's the color of blood, which will splash on the trees after Mr. Jingles kills them all, right? Maybe that's...
And
is
axes
this anything?
Have wood handles? I'm seeing the pieces are all falling into place.
No, this isn't anything. This is nothing. This is absolutely nothing.
Damn. You hate to see it.
You're thinking way more than they did.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, fair.
But we are at Camp Redwood. Regardless, we are at Camp Redwood, and they fully just rip off the opening scene or the scene where they arrive at the camp at Camp Crystal Lake in Friday the 13th, the original movie. Because as they pull up, the person who runs the camp, in this case, Margaret Booth, who's played by Leslie Grossman, who is Coco in the last season, is chopping wood, which is what they're doing in, I think it's Kevin Bacon's character, I could be wrong, is just chopping wood as they pull up in Friday the 13th. And I'm like, this is a really weird thing to rip off because it's not even like a trope. It's just in Friday the 13th, there happened to be the guy who runs the camp chopping wood when they first. I guess they're like, this is how you know they're running a real summer camp. They're chopping firewood. That's the only indication that it's real and they're serious. She is dressed like a Girl Scout, though. I should emphasize that. Margaret, who is going to be really fucking weird, is dressed as a, like, big Boy Scout. The kid from the movie.
I was going to say, like, yeah, like one of the like, scout moms for, like, one of the higher tier of Girl Scouts, like a brownie mom or whatever.
Yeah, like, she's got the sash on and, like, the kind of, the weird length of shorts where it's, like, just barely not capris, but also like isn't pants or shorts.
Not as comfortable as shorts, but the ticks can still get you.
Yeah. Modesty shorts is what I think I would refer to them as at like a Bible camp. They pull up and she's like, good, you're here. You're my only counselors. And I'm like, first of all, you didn't know four of them were coming. So that means Xavier was going to be your only camp counselor if he didn't enlist four people, which means this is either like a multi-level marketing scam that Xavier got like wrapped up in, or you were just going to have poor Xavier like run your whole ass summer camp.
It seems like just especially lazy writing, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, but we're just like off the cuff kind of, where it's like, why are they like, you know, are they all working here? I don't know. I wrote a thing before that it was a new job and I don't feel like going and editing it, so it makes more sense. You know what
you
I mean?
Could,
like,
you could literally just so much of American Horror Story is just, if they had written this one line differently, it could have been a better story. Or if they had the character do this one thing, it would have been a better story. And all you needed to do here was have Margaret be like, thank God you guys are here and that you brought extra people. None of my other counselors showed up. They called and said that they had like gotten information and were scared or something, which is silly. Like, to imply that, like, other people had also planned on going, but then they got warned by a Harbinger about it being dangerous for one reason or another, and they all got scared and didn't show up. That way you get the intrigue of that there were supposed to be other counselors and that they're not there, and that way there's a reason why this lady would be so, like, lenient towards these people when they break the rules later. You'd also get the, you'd get a little more gravitas to the threat, the fact that other people had actually taken the threat seriously and chosen to avoid going to the summer camp because of this urban legend. You'd get a little more, like, gravity in universe to the credibility of the threat of what might happen to them. And also you wouldn't look fucking stupid to imply that only Xavier was going to be the only employee at this camp for the whole fucking summer. Yeah.
They get introduced to her, and yeah, so none of them ever mentioned that there's a guy who was covered in dried blood and passed out after getting hit by a car, which feels like probably what I would lead with. You know, maybe that's my experience as a medical engineer, but I feel like that would probably be the first thing I bring up is, hey, do you have any, like, bandages or, like, a phone that we can call, like, an ambulance with? Because there's a guy who was covered in blood and passed out, probably from blood loss. You know, he might have also gotten a little duffed by a car. Deer, bear.
A car. Not right. Ours, yeah, but a car.
Maybe. A car, yeah. Someone else probably hit him.
Yeah.
You know, the other guys who were coming up here.
I mean that's honestly, what happened. Yeah. If you were going to make up a lie, because, like, they all come up with this dumb, shitty lie of, like, I bet he was lost in the woods. But, like, if you were going to come up with a lie and you were sure this guy, like, didn't know what you guys looked like and, like, could not place you as the car that hit him, you could just be like, yeah, we saw a car hit him and then we pulled over to help him. Like, that's a way easier lie than just, I don't know, guess he got lost in the woods. We definitely didn't hit him with our car or anything, though. That's weird. I don't know why you'd say that.
Weird. He's got, like, a lot of blunt force trauma in, like, one spot.
Yeah. And a bunch of tire marks. Did we run over him? Guys, did we run over him and I forgot? Did we pull season 8? Yeah. And when we say that, like, they don't mention him, we mean that, like, it's almost like they forgot he was in the car, because they're having this whole conversation with Margaret just like fully nonchalant, like, yeah, we're here and we're teens and we're ready to be camp counselors and this is how we're meeting each other. And like, just like the thought of that there's a guy potentially dead in their car is not even in like the back of their mind. They're just, they've fully forgotten he exists.
And you might say, oh, they all smoked weed, and like, A, Brooke didn't. B, as somebody who has smoked too much weed for one human being on multiple occasions, there's no amount of weed that would make me forget that we had hit a guy with a car. In fact, I would say perhaps the weed would make me a lot more fucking anxious about the fact that we hit a guy with a car.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, if I had ingested that much weed and we had hit a guy with our car, that would be the only thing I could think about probably for the rest of my life.
Right. Yeah.
Hour and a half of panic attacks minimum. Yeah.
Yeah. There would not be any forgetting that we had hit a dude with our car and he might be dead. Yeah. But Brooke didn't smoke the weed. So she's like, hey, everybody who's really stupid, can we like see if there's like a nurse or something? I didn't forget about the guy in the car. And they take him to the nurse, who happens to be, I guess, the best nurse in the entire universe and equipped to handle anything. I can tell you as somebody, we'll get into her like story in a second. I can tell you as somebody who went to a summer camp and had to be taken to the emergency room at summer camp because I had a life-threatening emergency. Camp nurses don't know how to do that much, nor do they have that much stuff to do stuff with. They're kind of just like medication bodyguards more than anything else.
So I was a camp counselor for like a Christian summer camp, so I have like a lot of background on this. I had a kid who had like a bleeding disorder. Like he, stop bleeding or whatever. I'm spacing on the term for it, but hemophilia.
Yeah.
And they kind of were just like, yeah, if he starts bleeding, let someone know because we can't handle it. I was like, oh, cool, man. Thanks. I definitely signed up for this. I'm 15.
What's hemophilia? This nurse is like way overqualified, like super overqualified. And her name is Rita. She's played by Angelica Ross, who I think only ever appears in this season and ever again, which good for her. And they take the unconscious guy to go see her. And she's like, are you saying you found this guy by the side of the road? Like, she says it with suspicion in her voice, which like that character shouldn't be suspicious unless she thinks this was like a hate crime or something towards the guy who was unconscious. But also, like, someone should ask some questions, probably. Like, somebody should ask a few questions, maybe. Look into it a bit, maybe, perhaps. But,
yeah,
like,
it's a little like, all right, Dr. House, like, let's calm down to, like, like, this fucking thing. But
she says it like she's suspicious that they hit him. And, like, they play it, like, tense. Like, they're going to be like, oh, no, we're going to get caught. But then she's just like, oh, he's probably just a hiker who got lost. And they're like, yeah, that's what happened. And she's like, I'll make sure he doesn't die. And I'm like, but like, there's like, that means he's probably a missing person. You don't want to like get the police involved? Like, he's probably a missing person's case. Do you not want to like let somebody know? Okay, it's fine.
Oh,
whatever.
They didn't do that in the 80s, you know? It's Pass the cocaine or something, you know?
If you're missing for more than 20 minutes in the 80s, it's just GG.
Right.
You're just gone. They don't even look for you. They're just like, it's over. I think that's the plot of the movie It. I'm pretty sure.
I went and checked. She has been in, she was in Ryan Murphy's series before this, Pose. Angelica Ross. Also, currently is like the founder and head of a company or a, I should get the exact term here, an enterprise, TransTech Social Enterprise, which is a firm that helps employ transgender people in the tech industry.
Wow.
Yeah, Angelica Ross kicks ass. If you guys have never heard of her before, she kicks ass. I was shocked when I saw her in this show.
I just went to see Yeah, I just went to see if she was like in another season, and now I just have like nothing but respect. So that's a fun surprise. Yeah.
Yeah, she kicks a lot of ass. I guess in my mind, when I was thinking of this season, in my mind, I thought that the lady who plays Lee in Roanoke played this character, or Angela Bassett. And then to see her show up, I was like, oh, wait, yeah, you are in this show. I forgot. I thought it was one of the other legacy cast members who played this character. But no, it's Angelica Ross, who taps out after this season, I'm pretty sure.
Smart all around, really. But yeah.
Yeah, just practical. Just practical.
Racking up W's.
Yeah. So Margaret is like, okay, enough hanging out with the guy who got hit by the car or didn't get hit by the car. Who cares? It's time to tour the summer camp like we do in all of these movies. And they do, and they go around the lake. And they really, really want you to know they've seen Friday the 13th, because as they're walking around the lake, she's like, the kids have to have a buddy system. It's so that they don't drown. And I'm like, yeah, man, we know the plot to Friday the 13th. We get it. We've seen it. We've played the game. We know what happened in Friday the 13th, how there was supposed to be a buddy system, but then the kids were fucking, the camp counselors or whatever, were fucking, and they didn't enforce the buddy system, and then Jason Voorhees wandered off into the water and died, and that's what caused everything. That's not what happens here, so the drowning and buddy system thing is literally just them being like, we've seen Friday the 13th. Because this is, it's, and in case you're wondering, like, well, Liz, you're harping on just, like, one line. No, because the next thing that happens is she's like, drowning is the number one cause of camper deaths, which is a fucking weird thing to say if you're not really emphasizing the drowning thing. And Xavier, who's like, that's a weird fucking thing to say, is like, oh, what's the second? And then she gets weird and cagey about it and does not answer the question and walks away. And I'm like, you motherfucker, you are the one who brought up the statistic. You can't just be like, don't ask me about this. You're the one who started it. You son of a bitch, get back here and tell me what the number two, because like she walks away like she's like the answer is serial killers, which it definitely isn't, like for sure it for sure isn't. The number two cause of death for like kids at a summer camp is absolutely not serial killers,
like choking. Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Anaphylactic shock, like what happened to me. Yeah, like some kind of allergy thing, like getting lost in the woods. Yeah. Even like I bet serial killers doesn't even break top 100, frankly.
Yeah, I was gonna say that. Even fuck reminds me of a girl I knew, Deidre, who found out she was allergic to mushrooms at a summer camp.
Okay. Yeah. I can tell you from experience, like, you don't want to find out you have a life-threatening allergy at a summer camp. It's not great, it's bad. So that's weird that we're never going to find out what is the second most common cause of camper deaths, but it is heavily implied, because in any other television show or movie, that the unspoken answer by Margaret would have been killed by serial killers, like the one who was here at this camp. But like, that's not real. Like, even if we were suspending disbelief, that would mean that in canon, in this universe, every summer camp has like a roughly like 20% chance of being like visited by a serial killer who's gonna kill a bunch of counselors. Also, he didn't kill campers, he killed fucking camp counselors. Same with Friday the 13th. So I don't know why she's bringing up camper deaths, period, because no campers die in any of those horror movies. It's always the counselors who die. We don't even rarely even see the children in these fucking movies. So I don't know what the fuck this lady's on about.
You usually don't want your killers going after kids, unless you're Wes Craven and Freddy Krueger, that one weird instance, which is just like, why did we do that? And everyone regrets it. But, you know, other than that, yeah, like, yeah, they never go after kids, really. So
All I'm saying is in Freddy versus Jason, it's Team Jason all the way.
Do you know, I learned this real quick in the remake, because, like, Freddy's a child killer and not, yes. like, you know, uh-huh. like, do anything with horrible with the kids. Mm-hmm. Except for the remake.
Except for the remake.
Which Wes Craven wasn't involved in. They decided to up that ante. And then it's like, wow, I don't want anything to do with this franchise, like, remake anymore, you know? So
Slow Beef, do you want to know something extra fun about that fun fact?
I don't know. I was a little iffy on bringing it up truthfully, but yeah, go on.
Not only is that the case, that in the remake they made him even worse than just a child killer, the video game Dead by Daylight could not get the license to the original Freddy Krueger. So the one in Dead by Daylight is explicitly the one from the remake. If you play as Freddy Krueger in the Dead by Daylight version, you are explicitly playing as the worst Freddy Krueger, parentheses, bad. horror franchises are so cool. Licensing is so cool.
Yeah.
Remakes are so cool.
NFTs and smiling serenely.
Yeah. Oh my god. So that's that conversation. And then they meet another character who I like vaguely remember liking this character. Like, she's at least funny. Her name is Chef Birdie, and she's played by Tara Karsian, who is also only in this season. So it's not any of the legacy cast. And, like, she plays, like, a really rough, rugged lady, like a big lunch lady with, like, tattoos and, like, short hair and, like, a bandana around her head.
I love this kind of character. Yeah. Just knows exactly who she is confident in what she is, doesn't give a shit, has had teens say shit at her a bunch of times and is just over it. Like, clearly is does not care. And it's, like, such a fun character, which she's just, like, smoking in the middle of a cafeteria, which, like, that was the 80s.
It was weirder if you weren't smoking, like, in the cafeteria in the 80s.
Yeah, it weirded everyone out. They're like, this guy's not eating a cigarette. And Xavier shows up and is just like, dibs, you know, being like a cock to a stranger, because that's part of what Xavier does, is he bees a cock to a stranger on a regular basis. And luckily she just goes, you can't handle all that. I'm like, that's my girl. Absolutely.
She says, like, you wouldn't know what to do with this. And I'm like, that's such a perfect, like, comeback. Because, like, it was, like, one of those things where, like, he's clearly, like, trying to do, like, that, like, flirty rapport with, like, a character that's not conventionally attractive. But, like, she's also, like, amicable to, like, teasing back. I just think she kicks ass. I just think being like, you couldn't handle all that, to like Xavier, who's like a pretty boy, like, is really funny. And I think that
immensely funny.
It is the actor for sure, not the writing, that makes this character endearing. I'm glad that this actor is playing this character. We get so many rules. Like, we're gonna get so many rules. She walks them around, not Birdie, the camp counselor lady, Margaret or whatever, keeps walking them around the camp, and she's like, this is very important. All these rules are non-negotiable, and if you don't follow them, I'll kill you. I don't even remember what she says will happen. She's just like, you'll get fucked up. I don't know. You just can't do it. And she's like, these are non-negotiable. Girl shower in the AM and boy shower in the PM. Which, like, you think would be relevant, but by the end of this specific episode, which only covers one day, she will tell one of the girls to shower in the nighttime. And I'm like, is that not one of the rules? Is if you can just do it anytime you want, is it that's not a rule anymore? That's like a suggestion more than anything.
Again, I have worked as a camp counselor and have worked as a camp counselor that had like a shared showering building or whatever. And the way you do it is by hour, because the idea of being like, you missed your 12-hour window, guess you gotta be a stinky little bastard.
Yeah.
Horrifying to me, the counselor. Like, absolutely not. It was to the point where they were like, make sure the kids are showering. Sometimes they won't and you have to make them. And I'm like, fuck. I don't want to do that. So the idea that, like, the boys would just be like, sorry, he can't shower yet. It's not 11. I'd be like, you are a stinky little shit. Go to the shower. Like, absolutely not.
Yeah. They did that with the swimming pool at all the, like, the Bible camps I went to. Like, the swimming pool was, like, designated by hour, but the showers were like, no, you come preloaded with, like, an assigned shower time. Everybody gets an assigned shower time, and you do that every day. And you have, it's like they were running that shit like the army. They were not fucking around. There were no stinky boys or girls at summer camp. But this is a rule that they make sure to waste a scene on, and then they just completely ignore it by the end of the episode. And she's like, girls are in the red cabin, boys are in the blue cabin. Don't make purple. And I'm like, that's not even how that expression goes at Bible camp. But I get it. Also, neither of the cabins is any color, actually. We see both of them, and they're both just cabins.
Cabins.
I hate to close the loop. How does the expression go? I don't know if I ever heard that.
It is. It's not, this is the red cabin, this is the blue cabin, don't make purple. It's just like, girls are red, boys are blue, don't make purple. Like, that's like really common, like, Bible camp thing of, like, no fraternization. But it's not like, you're in the red cabin and the boys are in the blue cabin. It's just, girls are red, boys are blue, don't make purple.
I'm ashamed to admit that would have bothered me if I didn't know it, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah. And then Chet just kind of has this response to, like, oh, we can't fuck, like, right in front of the owner of the camp, which it's like, well, now you can't because you said something, you dumb fuck. Like, if you had just done it, it would have been like, whatever. Like, yeah, because, yeah, reality. Especially because the whole thing is it's going to be, like, a very religious camp to some extent, or, like, at least very, like, purity coded, I guess, if not directly religious in a lot of ways. And yeah, you can't, the adults are going to do what the adults are, like, especially if they're a bunch of, like, teens who showed up and are immediately smoking weed and doing coke.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, man, they're gonna have sex.
And ran over a guy, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
and fought a serial killer and, like, have their own, like, apartments and stuff. Like, it doesn't say how old they are, but they're, like, anywhere from 19 to, like, 25. I'd say, like, maybe Chet's, like, 25-ish. Yeah. At the oldest, because we're gonna meet another character who's not part of this group later, and, like, he looks to be 45-ish, but, like, I'm sure the show wants us to think he's 28.
Right.
So it's really hard to kind of gauge ages, because it was supposed to be the 80s, which, like, that happened a lot, and, like, B, American Horror Story never casts, like, the right person for a role. They're just really, as far as, like, legacy cast, they just have to fit people in places. They're like, we have these characters. Who is our roster? Put them where they fit. It's more like a local theater troupe than a, like, a television production. It's kind of bizarre in that way. But he's like, well, we can't fuck. And then Margaret, who, by the way, like, this isn't supposed to be, like, a Bible camp TM. She's just really religious, and she's making it, like, now a puritanical Bible camp. And she's like, well, you can still jerk your peanuts, I guess. She says, how would I stop you? And I'm like, you know what? She makes a good point. Because, like, why would you ask that? Like, her response, like, is, like, pretty reasonable. Of, like, I can't stop you from jerking your shit, dude. I can't stop you from jerking and stroking your shit. And then this is where we get, this is where we get this line. And Xavier, who's leaning in the doorway being a cool guy, a cool and sexy guy, is like, it's 1984. Everybody has sex. Ever heard of the sexual revolution? And that's when Ray's like, sex won. And then I'm pretty sure they high five. I don't remember. But they definitely share a look, like they want a high five if they don't just straight up do it. And then Margaret's like, well, I hate sex. Sex is terrible and I hate it. And I have a dead rich husband. And that's how I could afford buying this camp. Here's a lot of lore about myself really quick. My husband is dead through a means I won't tell you. And he had a lot of money. And now I bought this Bible camp. It's now a Bible camp. Which you might be thinking, wow, weird way to end the episode. We are not even close to being done with this episode, actually.
There's so much. It's not even, like, the longest intro episode. Like, it's on the longer end for sure. It's just they're doing so much setup, and I already have a sinking feeling that we are going to have some episodes that qualify more towards being vapor that you watch than yeah. like a story, because holy shit, are they dumping a lot of story and setup on us right away, and not really with like a lot of lines for payoff, if that makes sense. Like, it's just kind of like these things happened, okay.
Also a lot of open and closed stuff. They're doing very, which this should make you nervous, a lot of apocalypse stuff of like, well, it's way too early in the season to be closing that plot line in episode one. A lot of those were like several things that were set up at the beginning that would normally in every other type of media be like a season-long conflict that you need to be thinking about, resolved in this episode. So you're like, well, what, where could we possibly go for the next 8 episodes of TV or 9 episodes of TV? Like, if we're already resolving this, like, what could we possibly do now? Which should make you nervous. You should be nervous. The good news is, in our next episode, we at least get to talk about a really funny thing Richard Jingle Ramirez jangle. Does, and also a new guy drops.
Mr. Jingle Jangle. Yeah. The guy that they're going to try and convince us is intimidating and not an old-timey song about a guy with big spurs on his boots.
Yeah.
And... yeah, I mean, just think, imagine someone in your mind chanting the word Satan, Satan, Satan for no discernible reason, like a Pokemon.
And also kind of with like the same vibe of like somebody in a musical who's snapping their fingers walking up to a dance battle. Like also that kind of like that kind of aura.
Once you're a jet all the way, Satan, Satan. Yeah, exactly. Like 100%. Oh. So till next time, folks, thanks for listening. And yeah, this one's going to be cool. They're just ripping stuff off so aggressively. It's been a while since they were like, do you think at the end of Apocalypse, they're like, damn, everybody hates when we have ideas.
Let's not do that again. Yeah. It was like the here, damn. Like, they're like, well, we tried to do an original thing and look how that went. Even though they did rip off a bunch of stuff in Apocalypse.
Oh, till next time, folks. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great night.
Bye.
Yeah, yeah.